So I come home and I go into the office, and there is this pink Post-it in the center of Kyle's office desk. It says, "Thank you for everything you do. I really appreciate you with a heart." And I'm like, all right, who gave him that?
From the Family Life Podcast Network, this is Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. This podcast brings together timeless wisdom and practical help and hope to blended families and those who love them. If you've ever experienced betrayal, or perhaps a relationship disappointment by a current spouse, a former one, a parent, a dating partner, a family member, you're going to want to listen to today's podcast, as we're going to be talking about betrayal, its effect on our heart, and how we can overcome it. And to that end, let me just offer a word of caution to you, the listener. You can't listen to somebody talking about betrayal and not have it resurrect some of your pain. Or perhaps guilt if you were the one who hurt someone else. So here's my suggestion. Practice some good self-care as you listen to this podcast. Feel free to start and stop or take a break, whatever you need. Take care of yourself. What we're going to try to do is to safely and compassionately explore what is bound to be some painful experiences for some of you. We hope to bring some light to your circumstances. Kyle and Sherry Keffer are both therapists. That's dangerous for a marriage, I would think. Kyle is a licensed marriage and family therapist and a certified sex addiction therapist. His wife, Sherry, is also a marriage and family therapist and certified sex addiction therapist. You may have heard her before on the radio program New Life Live. She's a regular co-host of that program with our friend Steve Arterburn. She's recently authored a book, Intimate Deception, Healing the Wounds of Sexual Betrayal. Now, here's the thing about Kyle and Sherry. They've both been through their own trauma, their own betrayal, their own loss. You guys are therapists, and you've also walked some pain in your life. Is there value in telling a painful story?
I think so. And you say that, Ron, my heart rate went up because you made me remember how long it took for me to even tell my story and to put it out there publicly in my book, especially when it meant I had to bring the best of me and the worst of me forward, because I knew I couldn't just tell part of the story. And I knew I had to look at what happened to me. And then in the deepest part of me, I had to look at what needed healing, what in my past may have influenced what I was doing right in that moment. So I have a betrayal story. And crazy enough, I used to say this. I said, if I tell this story, truly, no one's going to want to come see me as a therapist. And how it started is I was on New Life Radio, and there was actually a pastor's wife that called in. She was in the midst of living with the betrayal of her husband. And I think I was in with Milan Yurkovich and Steve Arterburn. And I felt like the Lord just said, go, tell it, you know? And so I addressed her and I just said, hey, I don't know if you know my story, but I too was married to a pastor. And then, right? But that was the first beginning. The guys that I had been working with, both of them, neither one of them had heard my story. But it mattered because that one person mattered.
Yeah.
And then God began to open it up from there.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because Steve Arterburn is a friend. He and Misty spoke together at our Summit on Step Family Ministry and our Blended and Blessed live stream event. And Steve and I have spent some time together talking about step family living and life. Of course, they're a blended family. And yeah. I've actually heard him tell his side of that story, how shocking it was for him to all of a sudden hear from a colleague who he'd worked with and respected tremendously, a side of her life that he didn't know anything about. And it was live and on the radio, and you came out big and bold and just trusted God in that moment to share the story. Your book, Intimate Deception, certainly lays all that out there, and it tells that story. It turns out both of you have had previous marriages before being married to one another, and both of you experienced betrayal. Do you mind telling us some of that story?
Yeah, just the quick snapshot is I was married to a pastor. And in the term of our marriage, there was pornography, affairs, and prostitutes. And so I never fought so hard for any one human being in order to try for us to get past that. But what I learned along the way is it takes two people that are both that committed to the recovery. And we were in counseling for 4 years. And during that term of counseling, he was having affairs. We were going 3 times a week, myself, himself, and then as a couple. But our therapist didn't know. And so I didn't know, she didn't know, and it came out.
My story isn't quite as public as Sherry's because it's in her book. Yeah, it was my marriage had been kind of on the downhill for quite a long time and discovered some betrayal, and that kind of brought everything to a close. But it was a very, very hard time because at that same time, a lot of other things happened in my life that brought me to somewhat of a crossroads. Actually, it's what brought me to a new ministry. I was a national sales director for a computer software company, and I lost that job shortly after everything came out after the divorce was filed. And so I had lost my marriage. I had lost my home. I had lost my job. I was kind of at a crossroads.
Wow.
And one of the things that I've heard Sherry say on several occasions is that, you know, although her marriage was a casualty and some other things were, her life was nothing but. And I love to quote that because while if you'd have talked to me in the middle of that time, I would have, I couldn't even see out from that point. But I look back now and go, wow. God has not wasted a moment and really has brought me to a place now where I can really see my life affecting others. And it has become much more of a ministry than I thought I would ever have.
You know, as you were talking a minute ago, I just wrote down the word costly. You know, I was just listening to all the things you lost in the midst of the fallout of that betrayal. And my, it was tremendously costly for you.
It decimates. It can really decimate a person, Ron. And it's interesting because I met him in the fray of that, right? And it's crazy enough, when we met, he was living in a house that a woman was renting out, 5 rooms, and he was living there with his teenage son sharing a room. I met him in really a dark time. I knew he was a good guy. I knew he was a guy of integrity, but I knew he was also digging out from having lost a home and jobs and where you live and so much.
Yeah. Digging out. Wow. What an image. Like you get buried under all these costs and you're trying to regroup and find your way, and you have kids. Kyle, you had a son you're trying to protect and care for and nurture, and all of that is going on. It can feel tremendously overwhelming. I'm imagining somebody listening to us right now going, okay, that's where I'm at. I have not taken the first step towards recovery. I am still just trying to begin to think about digging out.
Yeah, just breathing.
That's really the encouragement I try to give when I have clients in this space. It's one step at a time. If I looked at the long term, if I tried to envision my life, well, there was no vision at the time. Mm-hmm. There's no way to envision that. You just have to trust that you can see just far enough to put your next step forward, and then the next step forward, mm-hmm. and then the next. And that's the way you get through it. And then there will come a time when you'll be able to see much more of a future. And then you can look back and you can see the journey that you've made one step at a time. And there is encouragement in that.
Yeah. So Sherry, you were making your own journey because you had experienced your own betrayal. So we're a little ahead when you meet him. You're still digging out, or what? Tell us a little bit of your story and where you were at that point in time.
Yeah. Well, what's really funny, Ron, is I have a screensaver of Kyle and I on one of our first dates. And I love the screensaver. It takes me back to one of our first dates together. He doesn't like it. And the funny thing is because he was sitting there with me at the table. We just went in and had an appetizer. That was it. And he has this horrible memory of, I don't even know if I can pay for that thing, much less, you know, she's not going to pick me. I mean, I don't even know why I'm in the race, right?
Wow.
But I had been digging out for a number of years, and it doesn't mean that I don't have triggers. In fact, part of what kept me single again so long, Ron, is I had some negative beliefs, some shame beliefs that have gotten wired in through my betrayal. And it's a funky thing, our brain. So the way the brain works, it wires in shame in order to protect us. So these negative beliefs, these shame beliefs stick to us like Velcro. So one of them that I had was I can't trust anyone. And another one is I can't trust my judgment. I was single again for 17 years. And I had dated guys, and I had guys that would fight for my heart. But one of the men that I was dating at one point said, Sherry, it's like you've got a python wrapped around you. You just can't get out of the fray. And he was right. I would get closer to making a decision to be with somebody, and I could literally, Ron, feel the blood draining out of my body. I just got so scared. And so I think it's really important for those of us that have experienced betrayal, as much as I hate it to be that we're the ones that have to go in and do the work, we have to do the work. We've got to do the deep dig. We've got to get some trauma therapy.
Yeah.
You know, you might need some EMDR, which stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, to change those negative beliefs. You might need to do some group therapy. I did. I remember being in a group, Ron, where it was a mixed group. It was Townsend and Cloud had an offshoot with a guy by the name of Dr. Mark McMillan. And we met for a couple years, half girls, half guys. And I remember looking across the room at one of the guys the very first night of the group. And I looked at him and I said, you scare me. And the guy said, you don't even know me. Telling, right?
Yeah,
because
exactly.
I had been so wounded that I was having a hard time even being in the same room with men. And that is common for, at least for women. I don't know if it's a different experience for men, but for women, I know they have felt so hurt and so betrayed. They're scared of the other gender.
Yeah. Now, you've already started talking about self-protection and how shame can serve as a function even in that direction, ironically, that it becomes part of a problem at that point. And we'll come back to that in a minute. I want to unpack that here in a second. But let's just do a quick high level, because I realize that there's people listening to us right now that the betrayal came in a previous marriage relationship. Maybe it came in this relationship or a dating relationship in between the two, or whatever the story is. It's just that lingering residue that's holding on. And we just want to get real down into that residue. Talk about what it is and what do you do about it so you don't remain a slave to it forever. Some of the high points from your book, just real quickly, let's just hit some of these and maybe just give a quick description and then we'll unpack them. You talk about in your book, Intimate Deception, that people, the road to recovery, really involves a few things. You got to understand the effects of betrayal on your mind, body, and soul. You got to work towards some relational safety in your current circumstances. And then you got to try to be empowered to live that way. So once you see the map, doesn't mean that you can actually walk the territory. So you got to work with along with the Holy Spirit and a community of people to help you walk that out. Do you mind just commenting at a very high level about those three things, understanding the effects, working towards relational safety, and then being empowered to live that way?
It's interesting. The word betray has two different meanings in the ancient Hebrew. Now, there was a time when Hebrew was written when it was more word pictures, like Egyptian is written or Chinese is written. And there's two words. The first one is rima. And what that means is what comes from a person of chaos. And the second word is badad, which means to betray, to hide, to pillage, right? To offend, to be deceptive. And so when betrayal happens, it's someone knows they're cheating on you. They're not aware. They know, but there's this feeling of being duped. How did I miss this? And so some of that answers the first question, is the impact of sexual betrayal. And I have something that I call the dirty dozen. And we kind of touched on it a little bit just talking about Kyle, but it's the discovery trauma, right? It's the person that finds, whether it's a male or female, right? Finds that picture of they've been sexting with somebody else, or maybe they turn someone's computer on and there's porn there, or maybe there's a phone conversation or a card or lipstick, right? Or you're noticing one of the spouses is covering their phone and hiding things. Those are the discoveries. There's deception trauma that I created a term called intimate deception betrayal trauma, but it came out of 100 women, Ron, that I had talked to, you know, did some research with, and 65% of them, when I asked them, what would you say is worse? Why both of these things are horrible? Would you say that the actual sex acts that you discovered, right, that you found out about is worse? Or would you say it's the continued patterns of lies? 65% of them said it's the lies. 88% of them said I'd stay if there weren't all these lies. So the financial trauma that comes out of it, the relationship breach, you know, sometimes there's even treatment trauma, which is a concept that's come out of well-meaning people in an attempt to try to help might say things like, well, how's your sex life been? Yeah. And maybe you need some new lingerie. So there's layers of trauma, family stuff. So those need to be treated. Part of it is because that shame that wires to us can keep us from healing. It's almost like a broken bone, like a broken arm. And that bone, it heals, but it heals crooked.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting with a couple recently where there was multiple affairs, and I was trying to help this husband understand, because he was minimizing the fact that there had been multiple affairs. And I said, it's kind of like she had a broken bone from the first affair, and then you went and broke her broken bone. I said, it hurts and actually causes what I found in my research is post-traumatic stress symptoms.
Sure.
76% of the ladies, 3 out of 4 and 100 people, 3 out of 4 women had clinical symptoms of post-traumatic stress. So that has to be treated.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned the second thing was...
The second thing was working towards relational safety. And and so, Kyle, I wanted to ask you the understanding piece. It seems like there's a lot of layers to what Sherry was just saying, because there's so many different betrayals, so many different pieces of the story. Understanding it could take some time, I would think. And then I'm trying to wrap that whole finding relational safety part in there. How do you find safety when you keep uncovering another layer of betrayal?
Well, that's a great question. And there's a couple of ways to go about that when you're dealing with couples that are working through this situation. You do need to establish two things in a relationship, truth and safety. And one of the ways to establish truth in the recovery process is to go through a clinical full disclosure and putting down everything that has gone before in a document that is worked on with qualified and certified therapists in the process, because this is a very painful process.
Yeah, it's very painful because you're putting it in black and white. You're saying this is what happened, and you can't minimize it when that happens.
But what it does when you put it in black and white is that it generally allows the partner to get their arms around the totality of it and then come to a place of a line in the sand, as it were, and then moving forward from there. So that's where truth begins. And a lot of times in our practice, we utilize a polygraph on the back end of that in order to substantiate the truthfulness of the document, because there's no point in going through the trauma of the disclosure without knowing that it's complete.
Yeah, one of the casualties, it sounds like, of repeated lies is that you never know whether you've got all the truth or not. So you have to kind of analyze and consider that. If somebody's listening right now and they're in a new relationship, is there some usefulness in them going back and putting in black and white some of the things that happened in the previous betrayal in a different relationship? What do you guys think?
That's an interesting question. Yeah. You know, when we do a therapeutic full disclosure, it is a sacred document. And truly, there's so much to it that I don't want someone to be hearing us and go, okay, I'm going to go home right now and do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we don't put we don't have them put the details in, right? Hair color, body size, you know, because then those become more triggers for the betrayed, right? Every brunette out there now is an enemy. And so I just want to have a note of caution. Right. We've been certified and that'll, you know, you'll show people credentials, but those are the folks where our credentials
it's helpful.
Know how to do this. They've been really trained. But if you're asking, so Ron, if I have experienced betrayal, would it help to write some things down for Kyle, my new husband, so that he, is that what you were asking?
That's not what I was asking, but it's a good question. Why don't you keep going with that?
Okay. Well, I mean, so I call him my kinsman redeemer because I needed somebody that I could really trust. And I got to tell you, Ron, integrity was the most important thing when I was out there dating again. I could have met some really great guys.
Right.
And they could have bought me a house on the side of a mountain and an airplane to go with it. And I would have said, no, thank you. I need integrity because I did not want to go through that again. So there were some things in our courtship that happened that you honored integrity. We didn't have sex before we were married. I didn't meet his son until we'd been dating for about a year. You know, we were really intentional in how we dated. But through that process, I had to sift this relationship. Now, that might scare a lot of folks that are listening because they might go, whoa, that sounds kind of intense. But I needed to know that I know that I know that I could trust him.
Absolutely.
Right? And so he met my friends. Mm-hmm. I sat down with, we had dinner one night with Don and Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked over dinner, I said, so is there anything I need to know about him? And is there any character flaw? Is there anything that I need to know that I don't know?
And Don, just as a context, Don was my accountability partner, my rock in the midst of the final years of my marriage. He counseled me entirely through the end of the marriage, through the divorce, and then actually is a pastor and ended up marrying Sherry and I when we remarried. So he knew everything. So when we had dinner, I sat there with a level of trepidation with, oh my, what is he going to say? Not that I was trying to hide anything, but he knows all the warts. And yeah, if he decided to point them all out, you know, I was like, but by that time I was okay.
So here's what I want to hit on, because you have just hit on a very important subject for our listeners that I have found in my experience. And it's just this lingering fear. It goes back to the self-protection, to the shame issues, to the how do I know I can trust anybody again? How can I lower my wall and allow myself to risk in loving and giving to somebody else? You guys had a moment there where before marriage, this all came to a head, having dinner, we're full disclosures, let's get it out there. Lots of people listening are going, okay, we're 5 years into our marriage and I still don't know how to trust. I still don't know how to give all of me to this person. Let's speak to that for just a minute. Like, what do you do if you're finding yourself in that situation?
And Ron, I think you bring up a really good point too. Even once you do all of these things, there's going to be triggers that harken back to some of these destructive discoveries or destructive moments in our life. So we're never completely over them. Mm. It's how you then manage them afterwards. Because even having gone through that, Sherry and I have had some times when there are situations that trigger each of us into that, I need safety, or I need clarification, or I'm just scared, I'm not trusting. And we have to walk through that. even on the backside of all that we've done.
So let me share a story.
Okay.
All right. This is recent. So this was a couple months ago. I had some people come and clean. And, you know, when cleaning crew comes every couple months, there's stuff they find that's been under the chair, whatever. So I come home and I go into the office, and there is this pink Post-it in the center of Kyle's office desk. And it says, written very simply, it says, "Thank you for everything you do. I really appreciate you with a heart." Hmm. And I'm like, all right, who gave him that? I immediately thought of somebody who is a client of his that tends to come in short skirts. And when I see her, it triggers me just to see her in the waiting room, because I'm like, why are you wearing that short of skirts to see my husband? Right. I'm already right. Getting revved up. It's a trigger because it's a threat. So I knew I needed to talk to him about it, but I was hurt, scared, and mad.
Yeah.
All three of those. And so I took that little pink piece of paper. I put it next to our bed behind, you know, a water bottle that I have there. And I knew I'd need to say something, but that night I just didn't want to deal with it. And I went to bed, and of course I crawled into bed. I'm like not touching him. Mm-hmm. I'm like rolling over this way. Yeah. I'm like, you know.
Yeah. The message came through loud and clear.
Yeah. And so then I got enough courage up on Saturday morning to open up the dialogue. And so what I did after we woke up, I had went and pulled out the pink piece of paper. And I said, "I found this. It was on your desk. And I just want to know who it's from." Hmm. "Because I'm really hurt. Who wrote this to you? And I'm mad. I'm upset. I'm saying, I think it might be the girl at your office." You know, I start unwrapping it. And he looks at me and he said, "Sherry, that's your handwriting. Hmm. You gave me that. And I have it on my desk, because it encourages my heart." Hmm. Oof. I wept. Hmm. I couldn't believe that after all this time, I'd been triggered again. And I had this whole story in my mind about this person, and I couldn't even recognize my own handwriting. Hmm. Hmm. I mean, that's real, raw post-traumatic stress triggers, just like somebody who's been out on the battlefield.
Yep,
right?
Absolutely. Okay.
And a plane flies over and they think they're going to shoot down on you. I mean, it was that real to me. And so he held me, he let me cry, he didn't get upset. He just loved me, kinsman, redeemer, through that moment, because they're not always that easy. I've had some other triggers that have been. Yeah.
And I do want to point out too, that part of the process in a blended family is learning how to deal with those triggers. I love to say, you know, yeah, I handled that one really well. And, you know, that one came out really clean, but you've got to have a level of grace in the relationship for your betrayed partner, even if you weren't a betrayer. And I use that in my counseling sessions constantly, is that I wasn't the betrayer. Here's my wife's book, but I'm the new guy. However, there are times when I get accused, mm-hmm, because of a situation that creates a trigger. And it's going to be really, really important for the spouse,
yeah,
and blended families to learn to manage those situations with grace and dignity.
I appreciate you guys sharing that story. That is so real. I just have to capture the process that you went through, because I think that's the takeaway for our listeners. So the note was a trigger, and there can be a million different triggers, right? Sights, smells, sounds, whatever, imagination, some real, some perceived, whatever they are, it's a trigger. Then you got scared, afraid, somebody's moving in, something's going on, I can't trust my husband's heart.
And angry, don't leave that one out.
I'm angry, yeah.
Because right? I'm mad.
Yeah.
Mad at him and mad at her,
right?
Whoever she is,
right? So anger gives birth to being withdrawn and pulling away, trying to find safety. And then you find the courage, you said, to, yes, come to him with that. and how difficult that was to kind of muster that up, to push through the fear and say, we got to deal with this and try to bring it in a way that's palatable, as hard, as difficult, as awkward as that moment is. And then to discover that there was some truth on the back end that in this case was very reassuring, and your heart was able to go back to say, I am safe with him. It's okay. But the flip side there was, Kyle, you had to be receptive and merciful and grace-filled and not make it personal. Hey, you're accusing me unfairly, and go into that rift, but to try to be extending yourself in love and care for her in that moment. That's got to be a discipline of yourself.
It is. It is a discipline. And you got to listen to understand. And I usually make a distinction in my sessions between listening to hear and listening to understand.
Yeah.
Listening to hear is the words that are coming out. But when somebody is hurt or triggered, those words, that's not really what's going on underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
You got to understand. And so in this case, I recognized that there was some kind of trigger going on and I could move in that direction. But I've botched it a few times.
Yeah. Yeah. So the takeaway there for me is finding calm in the midst of that storm enough to reach for each other when it's so tempting to push away from each other. And that is what betrayal does, right? That's what the trigger moves you towards, isn't it?
It does. And you think about that chaos that happens within, right? That person, now all of a sudden I've been betrayed and now I have some chaos going inside of me, right? You talk about calm. In those ancient Hebrew word pictures, the word shalom for peace means to establish authority over chaos.
Mm. Oh my goodness. I wish we could do that every single day. I'm writing that one down. Keep going.
It's what it means, to get to that place of peace. And sometimes peace only comes after courage. Sometimes peace only comes after I cry it out, after we talk about it. If I hold it in, I stack.
Mm.
And then I, either blow like a volcano and he doesn't know what it's about, or I pull away.
Okay, you said stack. Hold on. Unpack that. What does stack mean?
Stack means I might be being upset by some things that are going on in our relationship and yet not bring it to him. I'm expecting him to just, somehow know what I'm upset about or read my body language. And so I stack, and don't tell him, don't talk, minimize, right? Try to swallow it.
Gotcha.
All those things. And I grew up in a home where we didn't talk about stuff. It wasn't okay to share your opinion. It wasn't okay to be honest. It wasn't okay. There was no one mining my heart, M-I-N-I-N-G, like digging for gold.
Mm-hmm.
So for me to go to that place, and actually that's kind of the vulnerability for both of us. We can both do this.
Sit back to back.
We can go back to back. We can both kind of shut down and try to get power that way. It's skewed entitlement, really. It's I think I'm right. I think I'm right. But then there is no connection in that place. There's no way to move through that chaos. You just create more of it.
And, one of the things that occurs to me that's happening within that is I'm hoping that you're going to prove to me that you really love me as much as I want you to love me. And if that happens, then I don't have to be afraid anymore that you've betrayed me or that I can't trust you. And so I'm trying to hint you into proving your love for me. To me, that is so understandable and yet self-defeating for so many people. I want listeners to hear the self-defeat in that. If I just go hint around or passive-aggressive or whatever it is, and you don't come to me, you don't get the message, you don't figure out exactly what I need, then now I have more evidence. I'm stacking evidence against you that you're untrustworthy, and my heart's just closed a little bit more towards you. I'm undoing myself. The hard part is finding responsibility for me, finding courage like you did, and moving toward him with whatever didn't feel right so that you're not stuck with your backs back to back.
my stepson. I love Coleman. Sad day when Connor and I, my first husband, made a decision on our front porch to not have a baby, to not have kids because of the pornography issue that had taken over our world and our relationship. So we chose, and I have never had a baby. I've had a longing in my heart for kids. And so Coleman has been a redemptive gift to me, and loved that my blended family actually came with a son. And my first husband, Connor, had a child out of wedlock that was a boy. And I remember the first time I saw him, it was like something in my heart, almost an ache in vengeance at the same time. It was like I wanted to say, he's mine. He should be mine. But he wasn't, right?
Right.
We made that decision. So this redemptive part of this blended family, Coleman has been a delight. He was in our wedding ceremony, and it's been cool. But let me share this. So I don't know what it has been, but when we've gone on vacations, on to this certain vacation place that we go to, it has felt like there is this magnet pull where I would observe Kyle and Coleman kind of go off and be by themselves in a bigger way than they would do it when we were just together. Like we'd have them over, we'd go to dinner, we'd have lots of outings and lots of times with family. And I never experienced it until it's like Gollum. I just kind of felt like he'd get with Coleman and it was like, precious, you know? And I was on the outside. I couldn't break in.
That was a pretty good impersonation, by the way.
So, okay, there was some dynamic happening. And I know I have a family history. I have some wounds from there. I felt on the outside because of the mental illness in my home. But it was such a weird conundrum. Why does it happen here? And so we had a situation, and I was seeing it happen again. And we had talked about it before, but never really did anything with it. Stack, stack, stack. So during this event, I was so upset about the time that he was spending, because I felt like I was on the outside, that I decided to not go to dinner. I was at dinner, but I said, you know what, guys, I'm not feeling well, which wasn't honest, right? I mean, my heart wasn't feeling well, but I wasn't sick, but I just said, I'm not feeling well. I'm going to go back to the room. Well, I was just mad because I had not chosen to be courageous and bring it again. So I went and had a bowl of soup at another restaurant. So I'm there entitled. I'm eating my bowl of soup, stewing in my stew, enjoying every bite, waiting for him to come to me. Just what you said.
Yeah.
I'm there by myself and I have this expectation that he should come and get me. I'm upset. He knew I told him I wasn't feeling well. I thought for sure he'll come for me. No. He had dinner with them and then they went back to the room. So I was really hurt. And the fact that he didn't come for me made me even more hurt and more justified in my anger and resentment, right? As this blended family, I can't break in. I don't belong. I'm not enough to keep his attention. And so we had a fight.
I bet.
Right?
I bet. Yeah.
This is one of those places where I did not, while she was sitting in her stew and stewing and feeling entitled, I was defending.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? I'm so over this. I mean, I have spoken my undying true love and attention, and I've demonstrated it in so many ways. And I had gotten to a place of my own entitlement. So we were both standing on the entitlement square in our empowerment wheel, which we'll talk about. But,
but Coleman's my son,
And so we were, and it was revolving around him, but it really wasn't revolving.
It's not his fault. We both said, we know it's not Coleman.
Right.
This is our issue.
It's just this step family insider outsider thing becomes the trigger that takes you back to those places of, I don't know who I can trust. I don't know who really ultimately cares for me and is fighting for me and is going to keep me engaged in this. And that's what is familiar given the betrayal stories that you've lived.
Totally. You're so right. And for me, it's I don't matter.
Right. back to that shame sort of stuff. I want our listener to really capture that, because I think there are many different step family triggers that really tap into old hurts and pains and betrayals from childhood, first marriage, whatever that backstory is for you. And it can be something that's not the same at all. Like, this is a stepson and my husband's spending time with his son. That's a good thing. But somehow it feels like it's a bad thing, a dangerous thing for me. And that's a really common thing for people. So again, I appreciate that you guys are just talking through the natural progression of that. If we don't find courage to move toward one another, is that we just constantly move further and further away and things get more heated or more conflictual or more anger or whatever that looks like. Mm-hmm. And so was there a time where you guys tried to repair that?
Well, eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we did end up having the explosion that you have when you're both stacking expectations on top of expectations, and then it erupts. And it erupted for both of us. And so we didn't enter the conversation in a good place.
Yeah.
And so it was rather wrenching.
And then poor Coleman, right? You know, he doesn't know what's going on, but he could feel the tension.
Sure.
And, you know, I think you assured him it wasn't him, but you know, we needed help.
Mm-hmm.
He had a therapist that you think would know the tools.
Yeah.
They go out the door when it's our issues, and we had to go get therapy. We met with a therapist and we had to talk some stuff through.
Sherry, thank you for that. I mean, that's just the truth. Just because we know sometimes what to do doesn't mean that we can always master our emotions in the moment and get it all right. I mean, I take great solace in the Apostle Paul and him walking through Romans 7 talking about, man, I just keep on doing the things I don't want to do anymore. Like, I'm trying to put this to death. Look, if he had some problems, Ron Deal is going to have some problems that I just can't shake this side of heaven. And that's the reality of it. We don't need to feel ashamed of that. We just need to say, somebody help me, you know, to reach out, to talk to somebody, a friend. Sometimes it's a professional, but it's that point of saying, if I just keep all this inside me, that's not working too well. I need to reach outside of me for something to try to help give some guidance and some tips. I love that you guys have those moments where you go, here we go again. Like Nan and I do. We've been married 33 years. We still have, here we go again. Like, how did we get here?
You do?
Absolutely.
That makes me feel good because we're 5 years into the game, and you know, but I love knowing that, Ron. Mm-hmm. I love knowing that you guys, after 33 years,
still, you're
working it out.
Around here, what I love to say is that we're always working on our marriages because God is always using our marriage to work on us. And just as soon as we get this layer figured out, he's going to uncover another layer of me that I've got to crucify on a cross. And I got to keep working on. This is a sanctification process, this thing called relationship, marriage, parenting, family, blended family. It's all sanctifying work. And as long as I am humble enough to allow it to work on me, there can be progress. But if I go into pride and go, I don't need this work, I don't think there'll be any progress. And that's kind of where we get stuck sometimes. Sherry, you say in your book that the most difficult part of recovering from intimate sexual betrayal in particular is what to do with sex. And, you know, sex is one of those places that you can be there but not be there. You can give a little of yourself but not all of yourself. And I think whether the betrayal is in this relationship or a previous relationship, there's a real temptation to only bring part of you into your sexual experience. Let's talk around that for a minute. What's going on there for somebody, and what do they do with those feelings that make them withhold?
Yeah, great question. So in the book, my chapter on that is called Remember When Sex Was Safe and Skydiving Was Dangerous. And the truth of it is I have jumped out of a very good airplane
twice.
Why
would you do that? Why would you do that?
I did. I've done it. But I'll tell you, I would rather jump out of an airplane, a good airplane with a parachute, than go through what I went through in light of the impact to my sexuality and sensuality. So again, we're back to this idea of shame.
Yeah.
And I used some research that was done by a group of folks where they were looking at three movements of shame, which is to move away or to move towards in a pleasing way or to move against. And so in my book, I talk about it and I describe it in three categories. There's the turtle, which is hyposexual, meaning I pull in like a turtle would pull in. Hypersexual, which means I am like a golden retriever. I'm highly sexualized because I'm trying to keep you from ever wanting to leave our relationship sexually. And I may even cross some of my own boundaries sexually in order to please you. And I have women that tell me that they do things that they're very uncomfortable with because they're afraid if they don't, he will stray, right? Mm-hmm. And then there is to move against, sexualized against. And I use the idea of the hedgehog. A hedgehog effect is a concept where there's two hedgehogs and they're kind of like little Brillo pads and they try to get close to each other when it's cold and they're like porcupine quills poke each other. And so they move away from that. And so it's this desire to be close, but I'm going to quill you in the process, right? So that's where maybe more of the affairs happen. That's where you're hurt and you're trying to somehow deal with this pain and equal the playing field as it may be, or you're angry in the bedroom, however that is. So those three different dynamics play out.
Sounds like you don't really want to end up in either one of those three.
Yeah, but those are all shame reactions to trauma.
Okay.
So we might have a shame-induced trauma reaction to the betrayal. And so I think for us, I know in my marriage, I became somewhat of a turtle. I pulled in. In fact, painful story. There was a day where Connor came up to me and I had not showered for weeks. I didn't know I hadn't showered. I wasn't aware, but there was a stench on my body that he came up to me and he said, "Sherry, I just want to touch base with you because it's been several weeks and you haven't showered." I used that unconsciously as a way of getting safe. And so sometimes when there's been a sexual violation, whether it's in a relationship before the blended one, whether it's from our past, right? Whether you're a male or a woman and you've been somehow sexually violated, molested, there's been some sexual event or events that have happened. You know, when kids find porn early on, whether it's little boys or little girls, they're both violated by that.
Yeah,
it changes the way they see sex. And so it changes the way you really see a real relationship. So I know for us, having waited till our marriage, I got to tell you, Ron, it was really important to me sexually that I was with a man that didn't want me for one of my body parts.
Right. And so, Kyle, that integrity piece was just as important, Sherry, as what you're saying about him as it related to the bedroom as it did outside the bedroom.
And it's a matter of respect and value. That was the other thing for me. I mean, we have lost in our society that level of respect and value for the person. Because one of the things I talk about in my sessions a lot is that when you jump straight from, "Hi, my name is," to sex, you're not interested in the person.
Right.
You're interested in the experience or the body part, as Sherry said. So you don't really get to know who they are. And we have really lost that ability to find respect and to find connection with other people. And the antidote to the three positions that Sherry described and to some of this dysfunction is really communication. And it comes down to having the words, sitting across from each other in a couch or at a coffee shop and looking eye to eye and then talking.
Finding the courage to really talk about what's underneath what's happening like you had to earlier.
Absolutely. And in our relationship, not sharing out of school, is that some of the things we had to do early on is we sat on the bed in our bedroom and talked while we were just sitting there naked or sitting there together where we would talk and get to know each other and discuss that and discuss some of the fears, some of the concerns. And that communication then would inform me as a man.
Right. Kyle, it occurs to me that what you were saying earlier, like the moment when she had wondered about the note and was concerned what that meant, and when she brought that to you, that in that moment you had to have mercy and grace and be looking out for her and reassuring her rather than getting, I don't deserve this, getting defensive about you. That I'm wondering if that same sort of a posture has to come out even in a sexual relationship, that this is in part about holding the other person and where they are now rather than throwing a pity party about what this is doing to you. Is that true?
It is so true. It's trying to see into the inner world of your partner as often as possible.
Mm, that's really good.
Yeah, he's done a good job of helping me as a turtle get more comfortable with my body, with my sensuality. And I am still growing that. I'll be really honest. I wish at this point I could even be more free. But I see that as we continue to engage and I continue to trust him more and I continue to unveil and he continues to honor me, he continues to look in my eyes, he continues to tell me that he loves me and I love your body. It's even though it's not perfect because it's not, it's like, but he says, I love your body. And if anybody's hard on it, it's me. Cause you know, I'm coming through that veil of shame. Mm-hmm. And so the more and more that he honors me and honors who I am, I can feel myself relax more and more. And again, as my kinsman redeemer, I'm like, this is what sex was supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. Like I had no concept before. So I am healing even still in my new blended world.
You've been listening to my conversation with Kyle and Sherry Keffer. I'm Ron Deal, and this is Family Life Blended. We'll hear one last thought from them in just a minute. You know, in our conversation, we talked about shame and its impact on us. Leading researcher Brené Brown says it takes three things for shame to grow: secrecy, silence, and judgment. Secrecy implies that there's something wrong with you, so you can't tell anyone. Silence keeps the story inside, where it festers and develops its own narrative inside you that keeps you imprisoned with the person who hurt you. And judgment just adds salt to the wound. It makes you feel blamed and bad for the stuff you feel ashamed of. By the way, the antidote to these is talking with a trusted friend or counselor about what happened, breaking the silence, refusing to keep the secret, and placing the blame where it belongs. Now, the Bible has a term for this. It's confession. Sometimes you're confessing stuff you're responsible for, but other times it's just talking around what has happened, saying out loud what has happened to you, and having it received and cared for by someone who loves you or is caring for you in that moment. It's breaking the power of the shame. Now, here's a quick observation about blended families in the church. Particularly when divorce is a part of their stepfamily story, there's a fair amount of shame that holds power over people. And the church sometimes inadvertently adds to it by the way we respond. I think it's inadvertent. We're not meaning to add to people's shame. But nevertheless, if this has happened to you, if you feel that shame when you walk into church, don't pull away from church life or church people and isolate yourself. I mean, maybe you did at some point in the past and you're listening and you're recognizing, yeah, I did that and I still am doing that. See, here's the deal. That just makes it worse. You're adding silence and secrecy to your situation, which means shame grows. It's time to break that silence and seek out the support of a local church. We think one of the best ways to do that is to get together with other blended family couples in your local church. Talk with them, tell your story, and connect with them and other church leadership so the church leaders can learn how to be more supportive to others in the future. And that gives you an opportunity to connect with a larger community of believers, even through social media. That's part of what we're trying to do at Family Life Blended. When you follow us on social media, you get connected with other people who have a very similar story as you. It breaks the silence, and it helps you move out of the shame. People drowning in shame often feel pushed into secrecy and silence by the judgment of others. Take your power back. Break out of that. Find community in God's church with others in similar circumstances and break the shame that binds you. If you'd like more information about our guests, you can find it in our show notes. Check it out at the Family Life Blended page at familylife.com/podcasts. And I do want you to know that we love hearing from you. Your feedback means a lot to us, and positive reviews on iTunes and various places is really appreciated. If you haven't subscribed yet, you can do that on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you download your podcasts. Just search Family Life Blended with Ron Deal. Family Life is spelled as one word, by the way, Family Life Blended with Ron Deal. And remember to look at the show notes for links to additional resources where you can learn about our other podcasts on the Family Life Podcast Network. Check it out at the Family Life Blended page at familylife.com/podcasts. And maybe, just maybe, if you like what you hear, you'll help us spread the word. Tell a friend, share it on social media, whatever works for you, that helps us. We really appreciate it. Wanted to tell you, we've got a new video series coming. The 10th anniversary edition of my video curriculum, The Smart Step Family, will be released in the summer of 2019. Along with an updated participants guide, this all-new 8-session video study is a great small group series or a DIY enrichment program for your marriage and your blended family. It's available on Right Now Media and at familylife.com. And for you ministry leaders who would want to use that series with a small group, join us for the next Summit on Step Family Ministry, October 24 and 25 in Chesapeake, Virginia. This is a 2-day ministry equipping event for anybody, lay ministers, pastors, couples leading small groups and classes. Even if you're new to Step Family Ministry, you're going to learn all the basics. We're going to try to help you out. And if you've got a ministry already up and running, we're going to help you network with others, learn about the latest resources, and find encouragement as a leader. That's October 24th and 25th, 2019. Learn more at summitonstepfamilies.com. And remember, if you're looking for articles on a variety of subjects related to blended families, online videos and resources, we've got them. Just visit us at familylife.com/blended. Now, before we're done, a final word from Sherry and Kyle Keffer. You know, as I read Sherry's book, there was a theme that kept popping up. So I asked her about it, and it brought a tear to her eye. In your book, I noticed, and I read your book, by the way. I read it all the way through. There's so much in this book. It is deep and wide, and anybody who's ever experienced betrayal in any relationship, past or present, I would really recommend Intimate Deception to you. But in your book, you say more than once, like I started noticing, okay, there's a thing here. You say, be kind to yourself. Be kind to yourself. Someone who's listening right now who's going, I don't know how to do that. What does that mean, be kind to myself? What would you say?
Yeah, it brings up tears just hearing you say it because it sounds so good to my hidden heart that has been so rode hard and hung up to dry through so many different events in my life. That self-mercy, just hearing your words say it, Ron, and trying to take that in to my deepest part of my bone and marrow, right? Mm-hmm. It's realizing that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have this all figured out. And so if you're one of those folks that are there today, I just ask you to walk the journey out with me. It's 20 chapters of what you need to heal, because truly, I don't want you to heal broken. I want to give you everything that I could come up with in my mind and things that I laid over my own life, tools and directions of what kinds of therapies and stuff like that, and that can help you heal and heal well. Mm-hmm. Because if you can heal and heal well, even though it's going to take work, you have more to offer the one you're with.
Yeah.
Right. And then they don't end up paying some price. It doesn't end up being costly for them because of your wound. Mm-hmm. They can't heal you. You can't heal me. I have to get on the gurney and I have to get some good healing to bind up those wounds and go into those places of post-traumatic stress, yeah. right? The shame and all of that in order to get free.
And there it is. I think that's the thought. God, I can just hear him whispering, be kind to yourself. I'm with you.
I'm with you.
I'm with you. It never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. You can rely on me. You can't always trust people in your life, but you can depend and rely on me. And what a reassuring thought that is, that he would just whisper, be kind to yourself. I'm here. I'm with you. I'm forgiving. I'm moving. I'm working behind the scenes. I'm with you. You can be kind to yourself. Well, that's a wrap for season one of the Family Life Blended podcast. But don't worry, we're already making plans for season two. In episode one, we'll hear from best-selling author Tricia Goyer about how childhood family experiences can creep into adult relationships. And we'll talk about calming angry kids.
My daughter kicked a hole in the wall. She was angry. Go ahead and call the caseworker. And I'm like, we're not going to call the caseworker. Like, you don't have a caseworker anymore. You've been adopted for 2 years. But still, that's her go-to thing that we're going to send her away. And it's just something that's deep in there, that's been there since she's a little girl.
That's Tricia Goyer in season two of Family Life Blended. I'm Ron Deal. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our Family Life Legacy partners for making this podcast possible. Our chief audio engineer is Keith Lynch, Bruce Goff, our producer, mastering engineer Justin Adams, and our theme music provided by Braden Deal. Family Life Blended is provided by Family Life and is part of the Family Life Podcast Network.